Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Samson back with you. Bald-Faced Truth rolling with you on your Wednesday afternoon. It's been a good show today. Anything to talk? Free agency, 80s music, LaMarcus Aldridge maybe coming back. But every time I'm in this seat, I always make sure to say, Timber fan, Thorns fan, I got you. You don't get enough love. It's Soccer City, and I'm going to take care of you. And we've got one of the best in the business, Jamie Goldberg from Oregon Live. She covers the Timbers, Thorns, Portland Soccer. Jamie, how are you doing today? Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm doing well.
Excellent. So for folks who haven't been able to pay a bunch of attention during the offseason, you know, NBA, NFL going on, what's gone on with this Timbers team in the offseason? What moves were sort of made?
Yeah, I mean, the Timbers had a pretty quiet offseason after making a run to the MLS Cup final last year. They only made a few moves. The biggest one probably is bringing in a new outside back, Jorge Marea. He has yet to make his debut, but that could potentially change this weekend. He's a player that they see potentially starting at right back this season. They also brought in a goalkeeper and brought in a veteran center back as well. The biggest move that the team is still trying to make is they're trying to sign a designated player in the attack. They were targeting a few different players in the offseason. None of those targets sort of panned out, but that is a move they're planning on making either in this window, with primary transfer window, which ends in May, or if not, in the summer.
And have we seen any names surface yet, or are they just still evaluating their options?
Yeah, there's been a few names that have surfaced. The most recent was Eduardo Vargas out of Tigres in Liga MX. It sounded like negotiations with that had stalled, although that remained a possibility. That was at least a few weeks ago at this point, so I'm not sure if that one's going to pan out. They had some other targets names haven't come out about that I think they're still looking to as well. If it isn't Vargas, it could be someone else. But again, they're not trying to rush into anything. It's a big move in MLS. You only get three designated players, which are players whose salary is above the maximum salary budget cap for an individual player. So I don't think they're going to try to rush into it. If it doesn't happen in this window, I think they'll look to make a move in the summer.
Jamie Goldberg covers Portland Soccer for Oregon Live. Now, the Timbers are on the road until, what is it, June, due to the upgrades at Providence Park. How do you deal with being on the road that long? And for people that aren't familiar, what upgrades were done to the home park there?
Yeah, the biggest upgrade is that they're adding 5,000 seats to Providence Park. They're bringing the stadium up to about 25,000. Really, the entire east side of the stadium is where the seats are coming in. They're sort of building upwards because of the limited space in terms of the land they can use, given that it's a city stadium. So they're sort of building upwards. It's almost going to be a wall on the east side. Along with that, they're making a lot of other changes in terms of sound system, video board, making the concessions better, more accessible, adding an entrance, things like that, upgrades around the entire stadium. But the big thing that fans will notice is that 5,000 more people will be able to get in that stadium. And the atmosphere that has been really good, obviously, since the Timbers came into MLS, one of the best in the league, it's going to be even better when they open it up in June.
That's awesome. And now, do you know how long is the season ticket wait list right now for the Timbers?
It keeps going up, but it was over 10,000 last time I checked.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, 5,000 seats will definitely help with that. And how are these guys responding to being on the road this long? Now, look, they're only a couple weeks in, but that's got to be difficult to just be traveling for that long.
Yeah, I think it's really difficult. In preseason, they were on the road for 26 days as well, just because they had to leave Portland to get weather that was better to train in, and also the accessibility in terms of Providence Park. So they were in Costa Rica and in Tucson, Arizona as well. for 26 days in a row. They came back and immediately go back on the road for this 12-game stretch. I think it is really difficult. I mean, MLS, you see in pretty much every sport there's an advantage for the home team. But I think that is an advantage when you look at sort of the numbers. Is even more prominent in MLS. I think because of the travel, these players fly commercial, so they don't have a sort of the ability to fly on their own plane that can leave when they wanted to leave and have a little bit more comfort in that element. That is, I think, something that's a little bit difficult to deal with. Obviously, playing in different areas of the country, dealing with different conditions, the heat in Dallas and Houston in the summer, and obviously, Timbers opened the season 2 weeks ago. It's 18 degrees and snowing in Colorado, the coldest game in MLS history. So I think there's a lot of factors that they're going to have to deal with during these 12 games, and they're going to have to find a way to keep pace in the standings, at least be within striking distance of playoff position by the end of that stretch. They obviously will play a lot of home games towards the end of the season, and that'll give them the opportunity to make up ground. But right now, I don't think the team is particularly happy with the opening the season with a draw, conceding a late goal in Colorado, and then going to LAFC and losing 4-1 last week.
Yeah, let's talk about the season so far. They earned the draw. They lost 4-1 to LAFC. I only got to watch a portion of each match. What I saw, and correct me if I'm wrong, the defense hasn't looked really crisp so far, has it?
No, it hasn't. They've conceded 7 goals, which is 2 more than any other team in MLS right now. I think the biggest thing is it's in moments. I mean, at times, the defense looks solid against LAFC, and they're a very good team. But in these sort of big moments, they're giving teams time and space around the box. They're letting teams sort of move the ball around the top of the box. They're putting crosses from the wings, and they're not doing a good job at defending those. The midfield, I think, specifically didn't have the best game against LAFC, and that was an issue as well. So this really doesn't come down to just maybe the players on the back line needing to execute a little bit better. This is sort of a whole team thing in terms of their defensive setup, organization, and individual performances. So that is the area, I think, of biggest concern right now. And certainly the area the Timbers have to shore up if they want to get a result on the road. They score 3 goals against Colorado. Against most teams, 3 goals should be enough. And obviously they concede 3 and settle for the tie against L.A. They created opportunities, but you're not going to win a game if you're allowing 4 goals.
Jamie Goldberg covers Portland soccer for Oregon Live. How are they going to they're playing Cincy next, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. How should they prep for Cincy? What does Cincy bring to the table?
Yeah, I think this is actually a good opportunity for the Timbers playing against an expansion team that I think no one really expects to make sort of a attempt to get into the playoffs this year. Cincinnati isn't supposed to have the easiest run of things in their first year coming into MLS. So I think this is an opportunity for the Timbers playing against a team that's still getting to know each other. I think one of the most interesting things about the game from the Timbers' perspective is that they're going to be facing Fernando Audi. Obviously, Audi was a major star here in Portland until the Timbers traded him to FC Cincinnati last July. He's a player that Portland knows. He scored over 50 goals during his time here with the Timbers. He's a player that can cause them a lot of problems. And when you're looking at how the defense has been performing, that's a player that they're going to have to find a way to shut down and make sure he doesn't beat them in the attack. But I think when you're sort of on this type of run, having some difficulty coming out of LAFC, maybe playing against an expansion team is an opportunity to turn things around.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to find a way to stop Audi. If there's one thing he can do, it's get out on the attack. I want to ask, how's Jeremy Bobasi looked at forward?
Yeah, I think that Jeremy Bobasi has shown a lot of promise since winning that starting role last September. He scored a goal, obviously, against LAFC. I think his goal-scoring rate is still something he needs to improve. He does a lot of good things in terms of his ability to create space for other players, his ability to connect with other players in the attack, his hold-up play. And he certainly has scored goals in this league, but he's not scoring at the rate of, say, Audi did when he was here in Portland. So that's something that I think he still needs to improve on. And he has a big opportunity right now because the Timbers haven't signed a designated player. He has his opportunity to get a sort of a long run in the starting lineup, try to use that run to continue to develop it and prove that he deserves to stay in the starting lineup even if the Timbers get a DP.
And for folks that are maybe just getting back into soccer mode after the offseason, who are the favorites in the Western Conference?
Yeah, I think LAFC has to be one of the favorites. And so the Timbers certainly didn't have an easy game going down to LA. But I think Seattle, with the way Raul Diaz came in last year and how he's built on that this year, and Sporting Kansas City are sort of the favorites, both coming off of great seasons last year, even though the Timbers managed to beat both those teams in the playoffs. But I think right now when you look at the top three, you have to look at those three teams in the West.
Sure. I want to ask you about Olivia Moultrie. If no one's caught this, the 13-year-old that has moved to Portland to train with the Thorns in advance of an assumed professional career. How's that going so far? This is fascinating.
Yeah, she seems to be training pretty well. I think probably the best compliment to her is that when you're out there watching training, she doesn't really stand out as someone that's a liability or doesn't look like they belong. She looks like she belongs out there, and she's been in training with the Thorns for a week and a half. Mark Parsons says it's easy to forget that she's 13 years old and she's doing really well and fitting in. And obviously playing with a professional organization can only help her development. If she's at 13 and is already holding her own in this environment, if she can continue to develop when she potentially turns 18, which is the age you have to be at this time, roles can always change, but the age you have to be at this time to compete in the NWSL, we'll see where she's at that point. But I think right now it's about her development, and it's pretty incredible that a 13-year-old is fitting into training alongside professional players.
Yeah, 18 is a long way away, but yeah. Are the Thorns doing anything special with her, or are they just throwing her in the mix and saying, let's go?
It seems like they're just throwing her in the mix in terms of training. Obviously, she can't play in the game, and that sort of makes it a little bit different in terms of what she's training for. But she's coming here to play with the developmental academy, but it doesn't look like that's going to be her primary spot to be training. She's been out there since day one with the first team and running drills and doing everything else just like every other player. I think they said it's important to make sure this isn't impacting her schoolwork, isn't impacting her social development, that they're in constant communication with her parents throughout this process. So I think things like that are somewhat different in terms of the sort of extra eye they're keeping on her in terms of those elements. But in terms of training, she's out there with everyone else.
Couple more minutes with Jamie Goldberg covering Portland soccer for Oregon Live. Real quick before I let you go, what other storylines are going on with the Thorns right now?
Yeah, I think with the Thorns, the biggest thing going into this season is just that it's a World Cup year, and the Thorns are going to lose a lot of players to the World Cup. In one sense, that's great. People in Portland are going to have a lot to root for watching the Women's World Cup in France this summer. Obviously, the U.S. being defending champions, there's going to be a few Thorns on that roster for sure who could potentially play big roles. In terms of the NWSL season, though, that's going to make it a bit of an interesting year. Those players could miss close to half of the games this season like they did last time around 2015. Might be a little bit less, might be a little bit more, but that's going to be sort of the storyline of the season, how the Thorns can manage the absence of the World Cup players during that time. Every team in the NWSL is going to be dealing with that, but in terms of the number of players Thorns have going to the World Cup, I think they're going to be a little bit more hard hit.
You can follow her on Twitter at Jamie B. Goldberg. And Jamie, I'm about to get 20 tweets thanking me for having you on, so I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, always. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, have a great season. That's Jamie Goldberg, one of the best in the business. She covers the Timbers and the Thorns for Oregon Live. You can find her blog, her podcast, her pieces there. Always love having Jamie on. She does a great, great job. It's good to talk some soccer, man.
I think I love that because you're right. There's so many people who aren't in soccer mode.
Yeah.
And some people might not even realize that the Timbers have played two games and how they've gone. So I thought that was a great interview, and she gave a lot of good insight.
She did, and frankly, I'm one of them. I watched the Timbers, but it's been such a long off season. I can't keep track of what's been going on. This is all sort of new to me. I've caught maybe 25, 30 minutes of each of the first two games, just sort of been able to keep an eye on it. There's other stuff going on right now. I have my NBA show, so I've got to watch a lot of basketball. I can't fully shift into soccer mode, which is why I wanted to keep it kind of general, because, I mean, some of the diehards, they might say, come on, Samson, come on, you can get more in depth than that. Well, yeah, but I think the majority of people that are the more casual fan, it's about getting them ready for this season that's already 2 weeks underway. So I appreciate Jamie. She's one of the best in the biz. I try to have her on not every day, but every week that I'm on the show, I try to get her on. We got to give the Timbers and the Thorns, we got to give them some love, too. Portland is Soccer City. Oregon is Soccer State. Coming up, the 2 of 2. Leave it right here. You know, I mentioned earlier in the show, I'm from the Valley, and some folks on Twitter got at me, where at? And I say, Carlton, Oregon, baby, Pinot Noir country. And they say, oh, did you go to YC? And I say, class of 96. A lot of people don't know that for 6 years, while I was growing up in little Carlton, Oregon, and by the way, this was pre-wine. It was just rural and angry. My dad was actually the mayor of Carlton for 6 years while I was growing up. And it wasn't bad. I mean, it was more of a symbolic position. It's one of those things. Like, there are some cities or towns, they have a mayor and the mayor runs stuff. Or the other option is they have a mayor that's mostly symbolic and talks to residents and takes complaints and is pretty much a volunteer job. And then they actually hire a city manager to actually handle the nuts and bolts. And that's what Carlton had. It had a city manager, and that guy made a great living. My dad still worked his job, did all his stuff, ran city council meetings, you know, once every 2 weeks or whatever it was. I couldn't even tell you. Shook some hands. People would come to the house and complain about their neighbor's dog, stuff like that. It was pretty ridiculous. And, I mean, it was cute. It was quaint. It was fine. It wasn't super, it was cool is what it was, but it wasn't like a critical job. The town could have went without a mayor. And apparently that's pretty common. Do you know where Fairhaven is? It's in Vermont. Fairhaven, Vermont. And Fairhaven has elected a new mayor, Mrs. Lincoln. And people packed this room in this building to celebrate the new mayor. She had to take an oath and sign a seal of approval on town documents, except it wasn't a seal, it was a footprint. Because Miss Lincoln is a goat. Fairhaven, Vermont elected a goat mayor, and they went with it. And apparently, Miss Lincoln was nominated by the children of Fairhaven. And, leave it to kids. There's a reason kids can't vote. There's a reason kids can't drive. Because they'll elect a goat if you let them. That's unbelievable. I'm guessing that they are under the city manager model of a town. What do you do? You got a problem? My neighbor's tree is hanging over my property line. Does he go talk to the goat? It's like, that's like the most interesting ancient civilization superstition ever. We have a disagreement. Go stand before the blessed goat, the sacred goat, and the goat will resolve your differences. Well, how? Who it bleats at? Which direction it drops its milk duds? I don't know. That's unbelievable. But apparently this was a civics lesson for students, so they could be involved in decisions made in the town. And it's something that they hope to continue in the future. Now, look, that's good. I firmly believe that we need to bring civics back. We do need to do that. Thank you. Thank you, Zimmer. You know, I have no shortage of goat stories. You know this, right? I've watched a goat eat a camel straight. I've watched a goat eat just a cigarette. I've watched a goat bash its leg through my living room window when I was a child. And then I have a very morbid goat story. Christmas Day, it was family tradition. We'd always go watch a movie. Go to the movies. Get out. It's not packed. Everyone's off. You open presents. You hang out. Maybe have some brunch, you know, a good meal. And then we go to the movies. And one year, we went, gosh, I'm getting old. I don't remember if it was The Truman Show or Man in the Moon. I remember it was a Jim Carrey movie from that time, 95, 96. And we had these pygmy goats. And the reason we had that is where I grew up in Carlton, we had just shy of 6 acres. And the property was, when we moved in, it was like nothing but blackberry bushes, like 10 feet high. And do manual labor. which I had to do some when I was a kid. You could pay a landscaper an exorbitant amount of money to get rid of it, or you just get a goat. And what you do is you get a goat or two, and we would tie it to a tire, like a tire with the hubcap in, and give it like 10 feet of rope. That way the goat has a 10-foot radius to move around on. If it really wants to go down to that next blackberry pile, it can. It can drag the tire. But it's not just going to go bolting into town and causing goat hijinks all throughout Carlton in the middle of the night. And goat hijinks are the worst kind of hijinks if you've ever had a goat. So we had these two pygmies. I don't remember what they're called. And we went and saw the Jim Carrey movie, and it was nice. And we came back, and in the backyard, the pygmy, one of the pygmies had climbed the blackberry bushes, which are 10 feet high, and its rope had gotten caught around in the bush, like tangled around some of the branches, and it slipped and fell. And one Christmas day as a teenager, I came back to find a goat that had hung itself. Farm life is rough, yo. It is. Zimmer's laughing. It wasn't funny.
No, it was your delivery of farm life is rough, yo.
It is. It's brutal.
Yeah.
It's brutal. Before we lived there, outside of McMinnville, when I was very young, very, very young, like through the age of six, young, grew up, lived on a dairy farm. And, you know, I'd go play with the calves, go pet them, feed them their bottles. If you stick your hand out, they put it in their mouth and try to suck on it, and it's cute. And then at a certain age, I realize, like, well, best case scenario, this thing's just going to have a machine strapped to it for the rest of its life to milk it. And worst case scenario, we're going to eat it. It's kind of good, though, in a way, that I experienced that because it really taught me respect of animals. Like, this wasn't a giant factory farm. This was like a small family-owned dairy farm. And I mean, it was massive, don't get me wrong. But like, I knew the guy that owned it. You know what I mean? It wasn't some giant faceless corporation keeping animals in little pens and things like that. So it taught me respect in a way for the animals. But it's farm life is rough. Not a lot of people know that. They you know, we're so detached from it. And we just go to the grocery store and we get whatever meat we want. But we don't think about the animal that was sort of behind it, do we?
No, not a lot. And a lot of people, I've heard them say, don't make me think about what I'm eating. But at the same time, like, I think that I think you hit the nail on the head. It taught you respect for the animal, and it taught you to appreciate what you were getting from the animal by, you know, killing it and eating it.
Yeah, and I'm not saying don't eat meat. I eat meat.
I was going to say that I have so many friends that either worked at the zoos or have a farm, and they go instant vegetarian. I'm like, I get why.
Yeah, I respect that, too. I do. I eat less meat than I used to, for sure. But it's good to think about where this stuff comes from. I mean, we can avoid it, but it doesn't mean it's not there. It's not existing.
And it can give you an appreciation for the animal as well as the people who are helping get you your food.
That's right. Give your farmer some love. They work crazy hours. I remember my dad when I was a little kid. He'd get up at 2 a.m. to go milk cows in the middle of the night. And it was rough. There were a few Christmases when I was 4 or 5. You know, there's nothing you want more than to open your presents. Well, Dad had to sleep. We didn't get to open presents till the afternoon. You think the cows take Christmas off? They don't. They do not. And so there was a whole lot of waking up, and I would get like one. I'd get to open my stocking, you know, or something like that. And it's like, okay, some candy and a Nerf baseball. Now I have to wait 9 more hours before I can open my gifts because Dad had to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that. He doesn't want to miss that, but Dad had to work. I mean, the farm life doesn't stop.
That's the thing people forget. Is that if you're farm life, it's 24/7. You don't get a break unless you sell the farm.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, it's tough. I have so much respect for farmers, agricultural workers, again, growing up and doing that to a degree, and started hardcore living on the farm, literally living on the farm, to then moving to a farming community in town. And it was kind of interesting. We were within city town limits, but we were agriculturally zoned, our property was, to now I live in downtown Portland. And but I never forgot that. And you know, those guys work hard. I need to join a CSA this year. That's what I need to do. Community supported agriculture. I need to do that. And there are some where you just go pick up your box. You're supporting a farm, and you just go pick up your box once a week or one, you know, once every 2 weeks, whatever it is. But there are some where they give you a discount, too, if you go out there and do some of the work. I need to take my kiddo out there and see if he can go out. And you know, when I was a kid, I hated, you know, picking berries. and doing that. I had to pick berries growing up. But it also taught me a lot about how this stuff actually works. And it taught me about hard work. And because of that, I'm a hard worker. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to work if it's pointless. But at the same time, if there's something you got to do, if it's got to be done, you can complain about it or you could just do it. And the quicker you get it done, the more it's just done. So if you work...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.